Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, we revisit our Faith is Funny program with four comedians who discuss the influence of religion in comedy. This conversation originally took place June 23rd, 2025, and was recorded live at the Studebaker Theater. This exhibit and programming series explores the profound ways writing reflects and influences our understanding of religion. American Prophets opens November 21st, 2025. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. My name is Kerry Cranston. I'm the president of the American Writers Museum. On behalf of the American Writers Museum, I want to thank you all for being here tonight and joining us here at the Studebaker Theater for our program, Faith is Funny. I will try and be brief, but I want to talk a little bit about the American Writers Museum and the initiative American Prophets to give you a sense of why we're here tonight, and then I will introduce our panel, who you really want to see, not me. So, again, I appreciate the applause, but I know that wasn't for me. But we're here tonight as part of our American Prophets initiative, where we are exploring the idea of religion and writing, which sounds scary, I know, to a lot of you. We're not supposed to talk about religion, but inevitably religion is baked into our culture. We are a society that has a First Amendment that talks about religious freedom. Obviously, there were native religions that were here before anyone immigrated to this country and came here. And people have come here for their religious freedoms for centuries. So that being the case, it's inevitable that a country like this is going to have a broad set of influences with various religions, with other belief systems that are going to be expressed through writers very often. And because of that, writers are very often the connective point through which we understand religion. So the term American Prophets comes from a Nobel speech by Isaac Bashevis Singer back in 1978. And in the midst of that speech, as he's talking about the importance of writers, and he says, in their despair, a number of those who no longer have confidence in the leadership of our society look to the writer, the master of words. They hope against hope that the man of talent and sensitivity can perhaps rescue civilization. Maybe there is a spark of the prophet in the artist after all. And I am not ashamed to admit that I belong to those who fantasize that literature is capable of bringing new horizons and new perspectives, philosophical, religious, aesthetical, and even social. In the history of old Jewish literature, there was never any basic difference between the poet and the prophet. So that's the reason for the title of our exhibit. Our exhibit and the programming around it are going to explore a whole set of ideas. So that's what American Prophets is, and I'm going to now talk about tonight's program. So, why are we going to talk about comedy when we talk about writing, religion? Comedy may not be the first thought that comes to mind, but religion is so often the underpinning of comedy. It's important that we think about how often we connect with religions that are not our own or address the issues of our beliefs through humor. From old jokes that start with a priest, a rabbi, and an imam walk into a bar. Or, as I mentioned, movies like Oh God, Sister Act, Groundhog Day, or TV shows like The Good Place or The Righteous Gemstones that are more current. Our culture is full of examples of religious and spiritual thought being explored through comedy. So tonight, we have asked four writers of comedy to help us explore this topic, and that's what you came here for, so I'm going to introduce them right now, and they're going to come out and join us. And first and foremost is someone who is here on a regular basis. Peter Sagal is the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's the most listened to hour on public radio, which is recorded right here in this theater on a weekly basis. He's a playwright, a screenwriter, and a journalist, but he's also the author of The Book of Vice, Naughty Things and How to Do Them, and The Incomplete Book of Running, a memoir about the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing and other adventures while running long distances. And tonight, he will be moderating tonight's talk. And next up is another regular panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Hari Kondabolu is a comedian, writer, and podcaster. Based in Brooklyn, New York, he has been described by the New York Times as one of the most exciting political comics in stand-up comedy today. He has performed on The Late Show with David Letterman, Conan, Jimmy Kimmel Live, John Oliver's New York stand-up show at midnight and has his own half-hour special on Comedy Central. He's a former writer and correspondent on the Chris Rock-produced FX TV show Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell, and in 2017 he released his critically acclaimed documentary The Problem with Apu on True TV. Next is Kate Sidley. Is a comedy writer and performer originally from Cleveland, Ohio. She writes for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and her work can be seen in The New Yorker, McSweeney's, and Reductress. Kate has multiple Emmy nominations, a Peabody Award, a Writers Guild Award, and thanks to her years of Catholic school, a visceral aversion to plaid wool skirts. Her forthcoming book is called How to Be a Saint, an extremely weird and mildly sacrilegious history of the Catholic Church's biggest names. And finally, Jabran Salim is a writer and comedian whose work spans broadcast and digital platforms. Born in North Carolina to traditional Pakistani immigrants, he was raised in a Muslim household and began performing stand-up in New York while completing a graduate degree in psychology. A semi-finalist for the Humanitist New Voices Fellowship and an alum of NYU's Episodics Writers Room. He's also toured with Hasan Minhaj, appeared on FX, ABC, and Hulu, and continues to develop screenwriting projects and stand-up across the U.S. Please welcome our panelists, and thank you all for coming out tonight.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. This is an interesting experience for me because I'm here mainly because I wanted to attend the event, and I called up and I said, "Kerry, do you think you can get me in and get me a seat?" And he said, "Yeah." Be careful. So, by way of introduction, one of the reasons I was very interested in this is because I grew up with knowing that I was hopefully someday part of this incredibly rich and well-documented tradition of Jewish American humor, right? It's this thing, everybody knows about it, there have literally been books written about it. But in all the time that I was aware of this, it never occurred to me to think about two different things, some of which I guess we'll address tonight. A, what does Jewish American humor have to do with Judaism? And secondly, are there any other traditions like that that didn't get as much press as mine did? So hopefully that will be something we will discuss tonight and many other things. And I thought by way of introduction, as they should introduce themselves to you, I asked everybody to basically do two things, or three things. First of all, to describe how they grew up. Secondly, where they are now in terms of like a faith tradition. And lastly, to tell a joke that comes out of that faith tradition. And if you've ever been to a comedy show with a sort of a group of comedians, you always know the least funny goes first. So I will go first. And that says nothing about the order. And then we'll just go down the row, so it says nothing about the order of them. So very briefly, I grew up in a religious household that was part of the conservative movement. If you know anything about Judaism, that means we did not wear outward stuff about our religion, but we kept kosher at home, and we went to synagogue every Shabbat and the High Holy Days, and I had a religious education that took me through my bar mitzvah. I was bar mitzvahed, and then pretty much I kind of, as soon as I had the freedom to do so, walked away from it. And today I would probably call myself very proudly a cultural Jew, i.e. it's very important to my identity and my sense of self and my sense of being in the world, but I don't even remember the last time I attended a synagogue, and boy, do I love bacon. And here is my joke. There's so many Jewish jokes, but this is the classic. Mrs. Berkowitz was down at Fort Lauderdale in retirement, and she was enjoying the visit from her little grandchildren. Her little toddler boy is sitting there playing in the sand. And as she's sitting there on the beach in Fort Lauderdale, this huge wave comes in. Monstrous, comes out of nowhere and washes the little boy out to sea, and everybody's going crazy and everybody's going nuts. People are jumping in the water, but not Mrs. Berkowitz. She stands up and she points a shaky finger at the sky and says, "No, you don't. I have suffered my entire life. I worked. I gave up everything. I kept all of your commandments. I kept kosher. I did all these things. I sacrificed everything. And this is the reward, finally, when I have a moment of peace and joy, and you take him. Where is your justice, God? I thought you were a benevolent God. I thought you were a just God. I thought we were your chosen people. And you do this?" And there's another big wave out of nowhere. And it comes in and it hits the beach and it washes away. And sure enough, sitting there is her little toddler grandson, completely unharmed, happy, laughing, going back to playing with his pail. And Mrs. Berkowitz narrows her eyes and looks up at God and points her finger and says, "He had a hat."
That's good.
Hurry?
That's so good.
Had you not heard that one? I honestly
I've
thought
never
I've
heard
really
that.
Heard
so good. I grew up as a Hindu, which I've struggled to define what that means, because Hinduism, I don't think, is really structured like a lot of other faiths, in terms of there isn't like a central book that everyone follows, and you know, depending on which city, state in India you're from, it can vary. Depending on which country you're in, it varies. And so I knew I didn't grow up particularly strict. We did the prayers at home. We would go to temple. I would identify as Hindu. I knew all the mythology. The mythology I knew. But we, like, I didn't realize I wasn't allowed to eat beef until I was in, like, high school. Because my mom would take us to Burger King all the time, and we there. And then my best friend was like, "Why are you, like, we're not supposed to eat that." I'm like, "We're not?" He's like, and I asked my mom, and I'm like, why did you give us hamburgers our whole life if it's against our religion?" And her logic was, "I know a lot of people who don't eat beef that are who are horrendous people. I'd rather you eat beef and be a good human being." And so there was also the possibility of not eating beef and being a good human being, but I guess that didn't really. But I thought of two jokes that I've told. One that I wrote a few years ago, and one I wrote when I was 16, and they're very short. They're one's a one-liner, and the other one's only a few sentences. But the first one is, "I'm a Hindu, or as it's pronounced in America, a Muslim." Shaq should have closed on that one, because this one I wrote when I was 16. It goes, because I haven't told it in many years. "I was a Republican when I was 7. It wasn't my fault. The symbol of the Republican Party is an elephant. I'm a Hindu and I got confused." Thanks.
Kate?
Hi, I'm Kate. I was raised Irish Catholic, which is also known as the double whammy. Actually, my full name is Catherine Mary, because I was literally named that because my mother thought, "This one's going to be a good Irish nun." sorry. 12 years of Catholic school, K through high school, and then I went to a Methodist college because, you know, I was experimenting. And I would say now I am a Christmas Easter Catholic, as many of us are, because I'm also a parent and I'm busy. And my joke is, so as I mentioned, I am Irish Catholic, which is a very specific type of Catholic. So I'm Irish. And my Irish heritage makes me very proud, very strong, very determined, very stubborn. And my Catholic heritage makes me feel bad that I just bragged about being Irish.
Jabron.
Hey, what's up? Yeah, I'm Jabron. I was born in North Carolina. I grew up in a very religious household. I'd say up until I was 13, my life outside of school revolved around the Islamic community. We'd go to the masjid. We'd have sleepovers on Saturdays for like the boys' youth group. I'd go to Sunday school on Sunday. I guess that makes sense. And yeah, that was up until I was like 12 or 13. My parents are divorced. So then I moved to upstate Western New York, like Dansville, which is a tiny town. I hope you've never heard of it. And that's when I started thinking on my own. And at that point, if you asked me what I was when I was 13 or 14, I would have said atheist. I would have been an undeniable atheist. I was very thirsty to understand religion, spirituality, philosophy. Then post 21, college, post college, I think I started making my own return to the concept of faith. And I still think I'm along that journey in the sense that I don't really think faith isn't always static. It's something you kind of explore over time. I'm not an atheist at all anymore. I'm a progressive Muslim. I'm extremely progressive. I'm Jewish. I'm very laid back. But I think a lot of my like religious philosophies derived from my namesake, Gibran Khalil Gibran, and I really liked how he kind of pulled from different faiths, almost like he found the unity and the commonality. And I guess the entree is Islam, but I like to, you know, scope out the other appetizers. It's a weird analogy that I'm riffing. I guess my joke, it feels weird presenting a joke like a school project. There's all, to me, most of these, of the major religions, or at least Abrahamic religions, there's so many shared things to the point where, like, I didn't even realize, like, we have Jesus. Muslims believe in Jesus. Jesus was a prophet to us. There's just different pronunciations and names to things. Like, we believe in Jesus. Jesus is Isa. Moses is Musa. Christianity is inaccurate. There's just slight differences. You say tomato, we say historically revised. It's similar, it's just slightly.
There you go, your panel for tonight. Let me start with you guys with something that I mentioned earlier, which is I was really aware that there's this huge tradition of Jewish American humor. It goes back to vaudeville, it's the subject of books. I had a book, the big book of Jewish humor, the treasure of Jewish humor when I was growing up, so I knew it, right? And there were all these examples of people I could look for, Woody Allen, and a lot, they're all problematic these days. Did you guys have that? Because I'm assuming that you had an interest in comedy, because here you are. And were you able to find anything that you could connect to, either as an example or as a tradition or anything you could hang your hat on and say, oh, yes, it's possible to be a comic as a Muslim or as a Hindu? Catholic, maybe. I can see other examples, but wondering what you guys think.
No.
No. Nothing.
Like, if specifically, I mean, I didn't even have role models, like, in entertainment as an Indian American. Like, right. A Hindu, like, what are you talking about? Like, that's way outside of the realm of possibility. Like, there's a billion of us, but we didn't exist in this country, right? And so, no, I did not have any of those roles. I was excited when I'd hear about, there's a show in the UK called Goodness Gracious Me. And it was kind of like in Living Color, except it was an all South Asian cast. South Asians being like a very big minority group in the UK. And they did jokes about religion and culture and colonialism. And that was the first time I saw any of those jokes and those kinds of things represented in any way. And it wasn't in this country. So I was thinking about this question of like, is there a Hindu humor? And I asked my mom and she said no. And then I asked myself, is there a Hindu American humor? And then it's like, I think it's me. Like,
yeah.
There isn't, it's still a fairly new concept, right? Like even the idea of Hindu American is a new concept, right? So the idea of humor that stems from that faith or that faith's integration in this country is still pretty new.
You're a pioneer.
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Either of you guys want to leap at that?
Tagging off Hari, there was no representation. I like really identified with your answer because for me there was no like Muslim comedians or Muslims on TV or in like American culture growing up. So there was no like who do I look towards to strive to be like or to give me the sense of oh I could do that too. There was none of that. And Hari has an amazing documentary about Apu and the Simpsons, but Apu and the Simpsons was like the only brown representation. But since then, and I feel like we are on the precipice or we're just hitting the tip of more representation in different forms. But like Aziz Ansari, which, he kept it under wraps, but he was Muslim, or he is Muslim. And then, there's other comedians now circulating, but I think we're in a beautiful time where now there is slightly more representation, and that's a direction that I hope to continue growing.
I mean, for Irish Catholic, I think I think a lot of the humor that I was drawn to growing up was specifically Irish humor. But I think that the crossover between those is that both of them have a lot of sadness in them. And I think that's all. I was trying to think of Irish writers who I really enjoyed growing up before coming here. And the first person that I thought of was Frank McCourt. Who, if you have never read Angela's Ashes, it's not a knee slapper. But I think that that is deeply beneath the humor of a lot of the Irish Catholic comedians who exist today.
Right. Were you like a fan? I mean, I can at least think of, say, George Carlin.
Yes.
A former, you know, he grew up Catholic, and he had material that I watched as a kid. In fact, I probably learned more about, like, Catholicism from George Carlin than I did from anything else. Were, like, people out there that inspired you, like, oh, yeah, I can do this?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I was exposed to, I also grew up in a house without cable TV, so most of what I consumed growing up was things like George Carlin or things that were still on, you know, UHF channels. So, yeah, definitely a lot of George Carlin. Yeah, it's funny, I think my perception as someone wanting to go into comedy is I more looked at it as, well, none of these are women, as opposed to, do I identify with them in terms of my faith or my heritage? So I hadn't really thought about it in that way until, you know, preparing for this.
Is there a way in which your religious upbringing, either by absorption or rejection, has influenced your comedy? I mean, is there something about, picking on you for a second, Hari, that something that came out of like a Hindu cosmology or worldview or ethic or anything that you think is reflected in your comedy?
I mean, one thing, and this answer is a little bit more tangential, but like, and I think maybe, Jermaine, you might have a similar thing, like growing up, like the idea of like Hindu humor, I think in part wouldn't have been possible because you don't joke about religion. And especially coming from like South Asia, it's like you don't talk about like religion, and not because it's impolite, because there might be consequences for making fun of religion. So like the idea of like my parents to this day, you know, will tell me, just don't make fun of Muslims. And there's still like this fear and this mindset. Well, first of all, I don't anyway, because there's this idea of like kicking downward, like what is the purpose of going after people that already take enough shit? But like, it's like, and plus, like, I think you have probably a better beat on it than an Indian Hindu does, right? But yeah, it was a lot of that kind of would push me away from talking about faith. Or if I talked about it in a very like kind of clumsy way. I mean, I still talk more about Christianity than any other faith when I talk about religion, because I'm shaped more by that in a lot of ways because of American culture than I am by Hinduism in a lot of ways. So,
either of you?
Yeah, going with that, I mean, also kind of echoing part of what Hari said, like we didn't talk about a lot of things, but we didn't really make fun of religion. So the concept of like Islamic humor is still kind of foreign to me. And I think now, you know, in America, with our exposure to different comedy and seeing it on TV, and then now there are Muslims who are doing comedy, we are able to maybe carve our own nuance within that territory. But previous to that, it has been kind of foreign. But there is the cultural aspect of religion, which is like making fun of like traditions within Islam, not necessarily Islam itself, but you know, just the cultural aspect, which I think overlays a lot of other religions when it comes to religion versus culture and how they're often intertwined. I do feel like outside of stand-up, as I'm pushing more like script writing and stuff, there is humor in that, but it's often conveyed through like values of humanity that's fueling the decisions, and sometimes what's antithetical to what you think is what would be an Islamic way to behave, someone doing the opposite, that humor and the juxtaposition and the contrast is there, but it does require setup in the sense of you kind of have to know what is a norm in order to break that norm to add a humor to that contrast.
Man, I wish I could tell like jokes about Hindu mythology and stuff like that. It just nobody would know what the hell I was talking about. Like, it would be, like, I hear this story, like, hey, isn't that funny how, like, Shiva cut the kid's head off because he didn't know it was his kid, but Parvati had made him out of turmeric, and so they ended up giving him an elephant head. Like, am I right? Like, there's, nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. And that's why, you know, like, that joke I told earlier about, like, you know, Republicans and, you know, being a Hindu and all that. Like, I wrote that when I was 16 because it's not a hard joke to write. Like, it's well delivered, but still, it's like, it's so 101 basic because I can't get into any depth. So I have to, if I'm going to talk about Hinduism, it's like monkey gods, you know, elephant god, eight arms. Like, it's just the stuff that Apu would have done in The Simpsons anyway. Like, you don't actually get depth because I'd have to explain so much. Plus, there's probably a similar issue that some of you might face is like when you're like the one talking about it, there's the added pressure of don't screw this up because how you represent this particular issue is how it's going to be seen by a lot of people because nobody else knows anything about it. And that's like, that's a lot. That's a lot to deal with and a lot that I don't want to necessarily step in. You know, I've only started tiptoeing on that territory after 25 years of doing this because I still don't feel particularly comfortable about it. So that's another aspect.
I think that is really hard. When I was working on this book, I was very concerned to not get any of the facts wrong.
Mm.
Because I knew that the minute you get one little detail wrong, that's what, you don't know what you're talking about. How do you represent Catholics, which I don't claim to do, but...
Sadly, you are now, so be careful. Yeah, yeah.
But I had a friend who was a former researcher, and I hired her, and I said, will you fact check me and go through the whole book and just see? And it's so hard because there's so much of the history of Catholicism that is probably this date, but maybe this date. Also, this is the story about this person, but also, you know, St. Valentine might not have been real, so here's the three different stories of what might have been what he was like if he was real. So it's very, it's a lot of pressure to not want to misrepresent something that people feel incredibly strongly about.
And yet, at the same time, so your book is, to simplify it too much, it's sort of a comic history of Catholic saints. Which is something whenever I would go to, like, you know, cathedrals in Europe, I would get into that. Like, tell me how that one died. Oh, they grilled him?
Yeah. Oh, it's gruesome.
Oh, yeah. And it's very funny, and you make fun of these saints, of their gruesome deaths and their, you know, their strange claims to sainthood. So you're using your religion as comic material. Or you,
yes.
Your faith tradition, right?
Yes, yes. And I think the one slight change that I would make is I guess you could disagree. I don't view it as me making fun of it. I view it as there's sort of two elements. There's the faith of the religion, which is incredibly personal and is not, I wouldn't want anyone to make fun of where I'm at in my faith, because I agree faith is something that you exercise, and I wouldn't want anyone to watch me exercise. I wouldn't want anyone to look too closely at where I'm at with my faith. But there's also the human element, which to me is what is so funny about religion, because it's that meeting of the organic and the mechanical, that meeting of, okay, well, we have to figure out if this is a miracle, so we're going to assemble a team of doctors, and they're in charge of analyzing the medical history and interviewing them, and then if a quorum of the doctors agree, then it's a miracle. Like, that's so mechanical, but it's humans attempting to make logic out of something that's so inherently illogical, and that's what I think is so fun and so relatable, and is to me what makes saints relatable, is that there is this bizarre human element to all of them, even the ones who weren't real.
When you were writing the book and working in the book, were you aware of, like, boundaries you wouldn't cross in terms of, like this is funny, and some of them, like I said, aren't...
Yes.
Yeah, okay, what were they?
Make
fun of it now. No, I mean,
I'm
genuinely interested in, like, because when we... there's one of the things that makes this whole discussion interesting is because... what are the things that aren't funny death, taxes, and religion. And yet here we all are. So I'm wondering, like, where, and yet we're all doing it to a certain extent, so where was your line? Where were you like, yeah, I'm not going to make, I'll make fun of these saints, I'll make fun of some of these bizarre stories and some of the weird things about canon law and how the Catholic Church goes about this strange process. But I'm not going to make fun of...
I think one, the first thing that comes to mind is I didn't want to make what I perceive to be the easy joke, which is a joke about pedophile priests. Because I feel like if you're Catholic, you know someone who was impacted in some way. And I thought either it's all you talk about, or you find a way to make a respectful reference to it, but I didn't want to make any sort of like cheap pedophile priest jokes, because I feel like that's, you know, as with every religion, there's like sort of like your first joke that you would go to that feels cheap.
Right.
And the depth comes from not having to go there. Like, you get to go so much further. And I love the fact that I can't wait to read your book also, just because I've always found the parallels between Catholicism and Hinduism in terms of ritual really interesting. And also the fact that you have saints that like represent different aspects of human beings in a lot of ways, right?
Yes.
Someone who's like was it Saint Elmo who does sailing ships and stuff like that?
Yeah, patron saints. You have a patron saint for different professions, different locations, different, you know, yeah, for everything.
Hinduism has that too with all the different gods. They reflect different aspects of the human experience or of a certain village or town. Like, there's that personal connection. Also, I've always loved Ash Wednesday, because it's like, oh, you put something on your forehead too.
Yeah.
I love that. And you keep it on all day. That's gut. Because whenever I had, like, you know, the red dot on after I'd pray, I would wipe it off so the non-Hindu kids wouldn't make fun of me. Right? Non-Hindu kids meaning everybody, right?
Yeah.
So, but, like, I always thought it was gutsy that, whoa, you kept the cross on the whole day.
That's so funny, because I feel the opposite way. Whenever I see somebody who keeps the cross on all day, I'm like, he's showing off.
It's like a voting sticker.
That's so funny.
Hari, you just...
I
was thinking this while Kate was talking, and you just said it, that there's this incredibly rich mythology, I mean, of which I know a tiny, 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 tiny fraction. You're talented enough that I bet if you wanted to, you could sit down and do a whole routine for an audience that didn't know anything about it, about the crazy parts of Hindu mythology, explain it and be very funny about it in the way that Kate does in her book. Would you do that? Is that something that you'd feel comfortable doing, assuming you wanted to do it, that you're interested
in? I've never seriously thought about doing it. Like, and I've written jokes trying to compare Hindu mythology with Star Wars, and, you know, because they all kind of take from Hindu mythology, like Game of Thrones. They all take bits and pieces like that, and it's pretty clear. But like, I have thought about laying them out in jokes, but never in a long form thing. And actually, that would be kind of interesting to steal your idea.
Take it.
And to do it myself.
Pantheon, yes. Mm-hmm. I'll throw the same question to you. I mean, have you ever thought of, like, I can do a bit about Muslim history and, like, the split between Shia and Sunni or whatever you might find to be funny?
No. I've never thought of that. But also, there's times where I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of funny. Is this relatable? There's so many different factors, which is... One is, like... What is religious humor versus, like we Muslims, we pray five times a day, which is a lot. But I would, growing up, I would go to my room to pray, but I wouldn't pray. I would just stare at the clock and just think, all right, yeah, that's about how much time it takes to pray. And then I would go downstairs. But then I'm like, all right, talking about that was so specific. That does feel more cultural than religious. But one thing that I realized with Muslims, and I think any given population, is that you are automatically the spokesperson. Mm. Especially in America, the second I say Muslim, they're looking at me like I'm a scholar, and I don't know shit. I do know, but like not like PhD level things. So when you speak, and this is also from within the same group, within Muslims, they're looking at you to be the representative for, and there's no way, we're just as human beings, we're just too dynamic for one person to represent all billions of people. And I've seen that with other cultures, and I've seen that within, they're like, oh, but he's not, we don't do that. Like, well, yeah, but that's how he grew up, and that's his variation. But I think there's a problem, which is we're seen as monolithic and we're not. There's so many shades and flavors. That's why I think it's really cool, you know, living in New York or seeing other comics. When I see like Catholic comedians, they're not like saying I'm Catholic and I live and breathe Catholicism, or Jewish comedians. There's a common joke, you know, I'm Jewish, right? And I think that's amazing, and I would love to see more of that, because I think that's more easier for non-people of that group to understand that, oh, they're not all the same, even though they're cut from a similar cloth.
I think there's an unspoken thing going on here, which is that there's differences between us that have to do with minority status in America. And that, I think, is huge. And it certainly affects what I think all of us feel we can and should do. But let me ask Hari and Jobran a question. I was talking to two other comics, good friends of mine, Maz Jobrani and Nagin Farsad, who are both Muslim. And they said that if you get up on stage and you're not a white guy, if there's anything unusual with you, you have to let the audience know immediately what's going on with you.
Depends on the audience.
Well, I want to hear your response, but let me finish what they said and then get your response.
Sure.
What they said is, because if you're not a white guy, or if you look unusual in any way, they're going to be sitting going, what's their deal? Is that who are they? What are they doing? Is that a lesbian? What's happening? And until you confirm it or explain it, they're going to be distracted by their discomfort, maybe too strong a word, curiosity. And do you guys, stand-ups, find that to be true? That you have to situate yourself for the audience?
I definitely did when I started. Like, I started, like, when I was... Like, I was working clubs in Seattle probably when I was 23, 24, 25. And Seattle, it's like, it's an enlightened liberal city, but still, it's not like a mean spirit, what the hell is that? But it's more of a, like, oh, I've never seen this type of person talk before in this format with that voice. That is not the voice I expected to come out of his mouth. And so you're like starting from there and you're trying to like express complicated feelings about things, and they're still trying to understand you as a person that exists. Like this type of person exists. Like you first have to come to terms with that. So I feel like when I started, it was a lot more of that. And when I toured the country in the beginning, there was a lot more of that. For me now, I feel like there's a lot less of that. Sometimes I can feel it in a room. Sometimes I'm like, oh, they find this curious. Like, and I have to come up with something to get to it. But most times I think I've also done it long enough now where I'll perform in front of crowds that know who I am. They came out because they've seen me before. And if there are people who don't, they just follow the people who do. You know, like something becomes normal if everyone else considers it normal, right? So, yeah, I feel like less so now, but certainly, absolutely when I started.
I think the general strategy is to address the elephant in the room. But when you're a minority surrounded by majorities, then your ethnicity becomes the elephant in the room. But if I had like a glaring speech impediment and I'm leading off with a stutter, I would write a joke about that, because that's a minority to everyone else. So then it creates some like, well, we see that, we hear that, but is he going to say that? Or are we just going to be left thinking if that's what we're experiencing? So it becomes the same as a minority of the, like, okay, to everyone else, and it depends region to region, audience to audience, but if you are the minority within that room or within that region, then you kind of address it because it's an elephant in the room, but that elephant in the room changes with time, changes with society, and that's probably why sometimes you don't need to do it as much now, or depending where you are, because we've kind of acclimated that perception of the diversity in America or from location to location. So it's just like, oh yeah, I don't need to talk about that right now. Like, they get it. And then you just jump past it.
Having like Aziz or Hasan Minhaj or the variety of Cal Penn, so many different actors, Mindy Kaling, in the public space. Like, The Office is like one of the biggest shows in the history of television. Mindy Kaling is on it. And that doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's a huge deal because all of a sudden it normalizes the existence of a South Asian.
I was actually going to say, when you were talking earlier, that I think the first time I ever saw anything having to do with Hinduism in like a pop culture or certainly comic context was the Diwali episode of The Office.
Right, right. I mean, which I'm sure one of us would have wanted to represent it first, but it's also like, it's the nature of like media in this country. And the fact it exists is incredible, right? Like now, like in New York City, Diwali is a is a holiday for kids. Like, they get off on those days, which is never would have thought it was possible when I was a kid. But that comes from, like, years of, like, the media changing and people becoming more familiar and the idea of, like, oh, you know, they have faiths too and this is what they are. And, you know, I have, like, there's a certain respect that builds for it over time.
Kate, I wanted to bring you into this. Obviously, these guys are stand-ups. You and I are not. But you're a performer, and you spend a lot of time in writers' rooms. And I wanted to ask you in the same way about, like, how much do you have to recognize, lead with, accept, accentuate the fact that you're a woman in what is still a male-dominated business? And do you have to deal with people's expectations of you? We can talk about in the context of faith. You're not just a Catholic. You're a woman Catholic, and the Catholic Church has never had any problem with women. And so how much of that is, like, in the front of your mind as you sort of do your work in the context in which you're doing it?
Much less now that I feel like I have more experience and more confidence in rooms, and also because rooms are more diverse now. So I feel like it's much less likely now that I'll walk into a room and be blown away by, you know, it being all white guys or something like that. So, but certainly I do find myself, I tend to shy away from volunteering to write about, you know, lady subjects or things that are identified as, like, the lady subjects, because I don't think that I should be always in charge of writing on a certain thing. Anybody should be able to write about any subject. We're professionals.
Right.
So I think that I've tended to push back in that respect, that, you know, if there's a story about, you know, the NBA finals, I'm going to volunteer to write about that because I watched them. But if there's a story about, you know, limiting access to birth control, maybe I won't, because anybody should be able to write about that.
Do you actually find yourself in situations like that holding back on the with the expectation, like, everybody's going to expect me to want to, like, tackle that subject, but I don't want to do it because I don't want to be, like, pigeonholed or just have that expectation hanging over my head?
Honestly, less so now than when I first started. I think just because my day job is I write for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and we have a really fantastic writer's room, so I don't really feel that anymore. But certainly in the past, and coming up and being a sketch comedy writer, you know, there definitely were very different expectations that I did pull back from, because I didn't want to feel like I was pigeonholed into just writing certain things or just writing, you know, when I was doing sketch teams, if somebody brought in a pitch that was like, oh, we have a pitch that has women in it, sometimes they'd be like, all right, why don't you write that one? I'm like, anybody can write women. We are people. But thankfully, I feel like, you know, that's in the past.
Trying to bring it back to faith for a second, one of the things I noticed in your book was that you write about a lot of these female saints, many of whom became saints because they quite literally would rather die than give up their faith and marry a heathen. And you point out is that, well, maybe that wasn't really the issue. Maybe they didn't want to be, you know, sold off to some person at the age of 13.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you clearly part of your perspective on writing about the Catholic Church is as a woman, right?
Sure, yeah. There's a section in the book called Saints Who Became Saints Probably to Avoid Shitty Marriages.
That's a much funnier way of saying it than what I just did. So clearly,
there was a significant portion of human history during which the choices for women were get married off at, you know, the ripe old age of 12 or 13, and, you know, pop out babies till you die, or maybe pursue a life as a sister or an abbess or something like that, or a hermit, where you might get to get left alone or learn to read or write, or just be in an environment where women are in charge. And it does seem as though there were many women who chose that life, and I think that that's very understandable given the options.
Would any of you make a joke about somebody else's religion?
I talk about Christianity all the time. Like, I mentioned this earlier, but it's like, you're born and raised in this country, like, it's not as if like Christianity is woven into so many of our traditions, so many of our shared knowledge and jokes, like even just jokes about Jesus and his existence. Like, I'm very aware of him. It's not my faith, but like, you know, I know a lot more about you than you know about me. Like, that's kind of the way I approach it. And, you know, I feel like, and maybe there's some pushback, but I feel like it is different when you talk about Christianity as a non-Christian in this country, because you are punching up. Like, this is the entity that has much more control, whether it's like with legislation or what people can watch or whatever else. Like, there's more influence there. So me commenting on it as an outsider and as someone who has that kind of minority status in terms of religion is like, okay, well, this is me punching upward to, you know, be critical of something.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I would. I just can't think of a scenario in which I would need to.
Hmm. Well, I mean, would you, for example, make fun of, as Hari just indicated, the evangelical Christians who have so much political power right now?
Oh.
Oh, those guys. Well, I happen to have a tight five right here.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. That's okay.
I think even the joke that I was doing up top about like historically inaccurate, the real motivation of the joke was actually to show commonalities between faiths, and then, you know, does a turn at the end. But I think if your intention is purely to just desecrate on someone else's faith, I think the audience can kind of like understand that, and that's when it's really punching down. But there's a way to talk about religion and find humor in it without it necessarily being like, that sucks or that's stupid. I think there's ways to go about other faiths beyond your own without it necessarily just being like mean-spirited.
Yeah, I should clarify, I'm not talking about like, I hate Christianity and this is why I hate Christianity. Like, it's more of like cultural reference. Jesus is going to come up, you know. I think I have a bit now that where I talk about how if Jesus came back, he'd be pissed that everybody is depicting him as white just because no minority wants to be called white. Like, you think I'm white just because I wear sandals everywhere and my dad got me my job doesn't mean... So, like, to me, that's fair game, because in this country, Jesus is a mega celebrity. You know what I mean?
It is funny. It does seem as if so much of our conceptions of, like, what's fair game, what is funny, what is not, is really tied up in, like, social power, right? I mean, I'm not going to do a joke about Muslims because I know what Muslims are putting up with in this country right now, right? I'll certainly do a joke about evangelical Christians because they seem to be in charge. There's the old rule of punching up. And I wonder, I mean, I wonder how much of that is lying under all of this. Is like what's funny about religion and what's not funny about religion has more to do with what do we need to joke about? You know, if you're going to, you can either laugh or you can cry.
I think that kind of goes back to what you were saying, that it's not that you're making, I would argue, even with evangelical Christians, you're not making fun of the faith. The faith is a faith. You believe whatever you believe. You're making fun of the human element, which is where the power structure comes from, where the money comes from. I think that's a distinction, because that's very man-made.
Yeah. No, it is. And the question is, I think for us right now, the time we have left is, can we sort of extract that extraordinarily powerful, overwhelming framework to everything we're talking about and try to find, like, the actual faith, you know? That's what I was trying to get at, was there's something you wouldn't make fun of. Like, yes, I mean, your jokes about Jesus are very funny, but you wouldn't make fun of, say, somebody who devoted their lives to serving the poor because they firmly believe that that's Jesus's message, right?
Right. I mean,
that seems obvious. So I'm trying to figure out, like, where that line is, and is there a way that same kind of sincerity informs the work? Carrie made the example of the movie Groundhog Day, which was written, I didn't know this until long after I saw the movie. It was written by a practicing Buddhist, the original Danny Rubin, I think was his name, who wrote the original screenplay that was significantly rewritten by Harold Ramis, was a practicing Buddhist. And he was interested in the idea of cycles of life until you are perfected. So is there work that you've done or that you've seen, you're like, oh yeah, there's like a religious idea there that I can appreciate that is still funny?
That's not from your own faith.
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, however you see it. Or maybe, since we're getting toward the end here, is there something that you think of as your faith that informs your humor? It could be as simple as, you know, a sense of egalitarianism. We're all sort of, as Dickens put it, fellow passengers on the way to death, and maybe that's where the humor comes from. It's one of my favorite Dickens quotes, and no one else likes it. I think it's really important. The quote is, it's from A Christmas Carol, "We are all fellow passengers on the way to death, can't we?" And then it's what his nephew argues with him when he's trying to get Scrooge to donate to some charity at the beginning of the story.
That is very dark.
I know. Makes me laugh.
It's funny.
I don't know if this is the answer to the question, but hopefully it's somewhat related. I think oftentimes growing up, or you know, there's faith within your community, and then there's your own personal journey and relationship with God. But within faith as an organization, oftentimes there's events, traditions, holidays within it that compound into, you know, your lived experience, which then fuels your perspective, choices you make, or the way you look at things. In Islam, there's this ritual when someone and maybe specifically when your father passes, you clean the body. Like in Islam, there's also wudu, which is before you pray. Like you wash, you know, your hands 5 times, you wash your feet 5 times, you wash your face 5 times. When your father passes, all the sons do that to their dad. And that's something me and my brothers did together when my dad passed. And that's such a unique, weird experience. It seemed so like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, really? This is what we're doing? But at the same time, I was crying also because of, you know, mourning my dad. But it was also like such a unique experience that post that experience, it's a part of me and in a beautiful way. Only until I did that I was like, oh, like there's really a lot of meaning, and I don't even know how to articulate in this, but it's almost, you know, expediting a certain understanding or at least closure towards that experience. Now, as far as like, I don't have a joke about that, but it's definitely something within me, and that is something that down the line, it may not come through stand-up, but that is something I could easily find humor in. It will take time, but if any given faith as an organization has events that are so unique, I think that just it compounds, and eventually it will find, you know, a humorous route. It just may take time, but it's stacking up.
I mean, there's something about reincarnation and not giving up. You know, like, how many times as a stand-up have I thought, like, I'll get him next time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's really funny.
Another life cycle, another open mic. It's basically just starting fresh. People that don't know you. You can do it better this time.
I guess the thing that I would say for my faith is sincerity. That the goal... This is going to sound so corny, but my favorite song lyric in the world is from a Christmas song called "O Holy Night," and it's "The Weary World Rejoices." I think that's just the most beautiful song lyric ever written, and that is what I try to bring. I think the goal of comedy is to give someone the blessing of laughter. Mockery is to harm. Humor is to evoke joy and to give someone that blessing of releasing some of that weary world and feeling the joy.
I mean, you just brought up something really interesting when I think you used the word corny, which is that at its heart, a lot of religious ideas, insofar as I think people like us think of them, are way too sincere to be funny, which is one of the sort of problems in the whole title of this session, is faith funny? In its essence, I don't think so, unless you are willing to stand back and just make fun of them for having that faith, which, as you say, is mockery. So that's the sort of thing that those people who have... This is interesting to me, to interrupt myself. We were talking about a comedian who I won't name backstage, very successful, very good comedian, who one of you told me actually has some really conservative religious views, right? And this comedian does not express those extremely conservative religious views on stage. And I was wondering why. He's got this amazing platform. He speaks to millions of people. Arenas filled with him. He could do it if he wants. And my assumption is that he doesn't because he knows it's not funny. And he wouldn't want it to be funny. I mean, what if he came out and in the middle of doing his brilliant stuff about all kinds of cultural things and funny experiences and his marriage, he said, and by the way, you know, and then he laid out some of his conservative religious views, he'd be afraid that people would think that was a joke. And it's not a joke. And I don't know where that leads us in terms of a conversation, but I do think that we're all sort of dancing around the fact that unless you believe it's all nonsense, right? Because George Carlin, I think, took that attitude toward the end of his, well, not toward the end, maybe forever, that he thought all religion was bunk and was happy to make fun of it all. But I don't think anybody on the stage is ready to do that, to make fun of a sincere, faithful person.
I mean, part of why it works with Carlin is because you know it's sincere. He's not going to walk away with it and walk away from it and be like, "Oh, those were just jokes." Like, you know, he's not going to take the coward's way out.
Right.
You know that he believes in these things, and it's built to be like, if somebody else did it, and you didn't see that conviction, or it wasn't consistent with the character they've portrayed for years on stage, you would have a different reaction. But we know that's him. That's consistent with everything he's expressed. He finds it all to be a bunch of bull, and like we're all suffering for it. Like, that sincerity is what drives his, you know, mockery maybe isn't the right word, but his ability to go after all religion.
Right.
I think also with Carlin, there's making fun of the concept versus people within it. And I think with Carlin, it wasn't like he was pinpointing like his peers. It sounded like he was making more fun of Catholicism or religion as an idea. So it didn't feel like he was hurting people. He was trying to talk about the idea, and part of that was when he talked about like growing up and going to Catholic school and his experiences. So then it felt like it was more personal in the sense that he wasn't just random shots. It was rooted in his own experience.
Right. I mean, you have to live it to be able to sort of talk about it in kind of a credible way. This is something I've been thinking about a lot, and so I'm going to pose the question to you guys. I think we're all similarly on the same level when it comes to religion, allowing for all kinds of variations. I know Hari has a child. You mentioned that you're a parent. Do you have two kids?
Nothing.
I have two young kids, and one of the things I'm struggling with is how do I raise them? Do I raise them as Jews, religiously? Because I said earlier that I feel extraordinarily proud and it is central to my identity to be a Jew, but I'm not religious, and I don't like going to synagogue because I think it's nonsense. Somebody just said, it's a shanda. But how, I don't want them to miss out. You know, I want them to go through the same experience of being forced to go into the Hebrew school and being made miserable until they are old enough themselves to realize it's all nonsense, and then we can, you know, because that to me, you know, that's the tradition, to use another Jewish joke. And I was wondering, I guess, Jabron, you can chime in here, even though you're not a parent, how important it is to you to pass on your faith tradition to your children. I mean, and let the parents go first.
It's so, because with Hinduism, I grew up like, with Hindu mythology and like the fantastical worlds that it created and all the characters, and you know, it was extremely exciting, but it's also very violent. you know, which a lot of religion is. And so I'm a parent who's very careful that my kid doesn't consume too much violence. And then it's like, okay, I don't want my kid to consume too much violence. I don't want him to play with water guns. I don't want to do this, this, and this. But, oh, yeah, this, like, pillar of what makes us who we are. I want you to, like, I mean, beheadings. Like, so many of the old religions have beheadings in them. So many people get their heads cut off. Like, it's so hard. How do you give them an accurate understanding of, because I can give them the values, sure, the values are almost not religious, the values are almost this greater idea of that shared human things, right? But like the actual stuff is so rooted in like the mythology. How do I give them the mythology? How do they get to, because for us it was so like, that's how we got it. Like we had like various films and miniseries about various like Hindu epics, and we would watch them, and that's how we would understand them and the stories, and we could make jokes about the stories because we understood the references, just like you would with any other kind of like epic or saga, right? Which all rip off Hinduism. Which I really believe. I believe all of them are just ripping off Hinduism. Like it's like there's just so many incredible stories about families and dynasties and kingdoms, and it's just, but like ultimately, like I don't know how to pass that on in a way that doesn't scare the hell out of him.
Sure.
Okay, that's so think? Funny because I feel like the scary stuff is what made me get super into Catholicism.
Oh, really?
I was like, whoa, she got, there's a saint that got killed by being tied, they pulled two trees down and tied her to it, and then they let the trees go and they ripped her in half. I mean, if you're a kid, you're like, and you're like me who was into X-Files, you're like, oh, tell me more.
Wait a minute, because you mentioned, I hadn't heard of that one, I gotta say. I had heard of the cut off the breast, and I had heard of the St. Jerome who got grilled, yeah. But I did not hear about the two palm trees. And so I'm asking, how old were you when they told you about that? And you were like genuinely thrilled?
That's St. Corona. And roughly the age when you start like really aggressively learning about the saints in Catholic school is around like 7th, 8th grade, because that's when you're going to do your confirmation and you have to pick your patron saint whose name you're going to take. So that's when you start reading about all the saints and realizing that there's like lots of, you know, blood and gore, and there's a fun side. But to answer the question about our kids, I mean, the same. It's a struggle to... You know, I was raised Catholic. My husband was raised Catholic. He and I had very different experiences with the Catholic Church and with Catholic school. Catholic school was a saving grace for me. I went to an all-girls Catholic high school. And thanks to that, in my pivotal years, I was exposed to only women being in charge. And I think that helped form me into who I am today. Whereas he was sent to Catholic school as a punishment for being bad in public school. So it's, you know, you just, as with anyone in any religion, you just have to find your way and piece it together and hope that you raise kids who take the values and, you know, the cool horror stories and then leave all the bad stuff behind.
One thing I definitely don't want is to have, for my hypothetical kid, which I do want, I would love a son or a daughter.
Do you want one of mine?
No. But I would partially is that for their identity's sake, for they to feel like they belong or that there's a community for them. But one thing I would be adamant about is to make sure that they don't look at it like this religion is the right religion and these are the wrong religions and vice versa. Because I don't really think that's going to do anyone any favor. And that seed will grow into animosity and hate, which I don't want at all. I would want, you know, my son or daughter to grow up with some understanding of religion. But I mean, I'm not so into the history, but more of like the moral foundation, which I think echoes through almost every religion, which is inherently, you know, just be a nice person. And so... if that's like Islam, that's the backbone of that for my son, you know, it depends on who my wife is and what she approves of. I don't know. I think she might be argumentative. But But ultimately, I think I would like, you know, my son or daughter to visit a mosque, maybe visit a synagogue, maybe visit somewhere else, but to get some religious understanding. And then ultimately, they're going to go in their own path. And that's, you know, up to them. But I think some understanding of religions in general, I would like.
We're at the end, and I don't have any grand conclusion. But if anything you guys wanted to add or correct or object to or just let the audience know, this is something you think about when you're doing your work?
I mean, Jedis are really just Hindu priests. Like,
actually, I would, as a massive science fiction and fantasy nerd then and now, I would listen to that. I would like see you do a 45-minute special just laying that out.
It's just like using the power of like concentrate. Oh, you mean meditation? Okay. And then that's like literally straight up Hinduism, straight up.
I'm almost more worried about you offending Star Wars fans.
No, like Jedi is ancient. It came before Hinduism.
I would love
it
to.
It says
have
a long, long time ago, Hari. Huey Dewey. Anyway.
That's great.
Maybe we better need to leave it there before somebody says something they either regret or find that they don't. So thank you all so much for coming. Please give it up for our panelists, Gibran and Kate and Hari. I'm Peter Sagal. Thank you so much for coming. Thanks for your support of the American Writers Museum, half mile up Michigan Avenue. Stop by if you haven't. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the American Writers Museum Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.